Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck. Or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge. Upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
I pray that your time here brings you good memories and good results.
Thank you. I pray for that too.
This is the Extra Hot Great Podcast, episode 550 for the week of February 17th, 2025. I am career foot washer David T. Cole, and I'm here with chattering monkey mind Sarah D. Bunting.
Concentrate on the breath.
Quebecois sugar baby Tara Ariano.
Oui.
And brother with ambiguous motives Dan Daddario.
Looking diesel, bro.
Welcome to Extra Hot Great for another week. Joining us, he is a feature writer at Variety and the author of the upcoming novel, The Talent. You have heard him with us before. It's Daniel Daddario.
Welcome back, Dan.
Daniel.
Thanks for having me, guys. I'm really excited to discuss The White Lotus.
We are, in fact, here to discuss The White Lotus, about which we can say we've visited locations of this resort chain in Maui and Taormina. Now we're spending a season in Thailand. This location has a special focus on wellness, which some of the guests we meet need more than others. There are too many new guests to mention up top, but we will say returning from season one is Belinda, Natasha Rothwell, at the resort to take a special 3-month spa course. And her colleague Pornchai, Dom Hetrakul, seems to have a lot he would like to teach her. And yes, the season does open with a flash forward to a dead body at the end, but whose? The show was created by Mike White. As usual, he wrote and directed every episode. Season 3 premiered February 16th on HBO with 7 more episodes to follow on following Sundays. We got access to 6. We'll be careful about spoiling events from episodes that have not aired yet. Let's do the Chen check-in. Dan, should our listeners watch The White Lotus?
Yeah, absolutely.
Sarah?
If this is your jam, then yes, you should. It is extremely not mine, so I won't be continuing, but have at it.
So weird to me that this doesn't follow into your, because they made a crime just for you, just to get you.
Yeah.
Dave.
No, don't care.
I gotta say yes, although I will admit, coming into The White Lotus light, this one didn't grab me as fast as season 2 did, but I'm still in to watch the rest of it for sure.
I'm in as well. Let's get into it. As in past seasons, we meet a bunch of guests and resort employees, and their plot lines are mostly self-contained, although they do, as the season goes on, cross over with each other occasionally. Dan, was there one plot line this season you thought was particularly well-drawn?
Yes. Agreeing with Dave that the season gets off to a bit of a slower start, the one that I was with from the very first moment is the girls' trip of Leslie Bibb, Michelle Monaghan, and Carrie Coon's characters kind of celebrating all the good fortune in their lives, and some seem more fortunate than others. I thought that was just such a good portrait of rivalry between friends.
Mm-hmm. I agree. They were my favorite, too. And as soon as I saw three ladies traveling together, I was like, you can't do that. As soon as one peels off, the other two talk about her. That's exactly what happens. That's what happens.
They fell into the classic trap. Come on, ladies.
Dave, did you have a favorite plot line of the episodes you saw?
It seems like it's going to pay off the most as far as like just like the reason why you watch something like White Lotus. Mm-hmm. But I'm curious where Walton Goggins' storyline is going to go, because you're going to watch the first episode. It's like, oh, this guy's boring. And then he's sort of a grump for a few more, and then it starts to go places. And
yeah,
I heard he even goes further than I expect.
Yep.
So I'm curious where we're going to go with that. So that is the one to watch, even though out of the gate, you wouldn't think so.
Well, Sarah is our designated White Lotus hater. Was there one you hated more than the others?
I don't hate it. I know.
I'm just teasing.
Like, I have this relationship with this show that was like my relationship with David Lynch, which was the product is just not really for me. I don't enjoy consuming it, but it's not that it's not well done, and I'm glad it exists. I just don't need to interact with it, so feel free. And even though I felt like someone in that writer's room was like, let's do a UNC Duke thing, that'll get her, like, no. I mean, it was perfectly pitched, but it also was of a piece with my primary complaint, which is how many ways can I watch rich people, like the nuanced shading of them being twunts is like, okay, asked and answered. I don't need any more of that. I'm just exhausted by it. Like, the performances are really good. I feel like Leslie Bibb is doing a Jenny Garth impression, maybe. It's kind of wild to me, but no least favorite plot lines of it in the first like one or two episodes. It was more like, it felt like sometimes they were being too performatively obscure about where a thing is going. This is a Sarah not being on its wavelength problem, not a problem with the material, I wouldn't say. I did immediately wish Carrie Coon's roommates would both die horribly, but again, that's a Sarah thing.
Yeah, to me, that's the fun of it.
They gave the basketball storyline to the worst family on earth, so that doesn't help. Matters either. Jason Isaacs and Parker Posey as the parents. Patrick Schwarzenegger is one of the kids and two others. And they are monsters, every single one of them.
Yeah. But I mean, Dan, as you started to say, this is what you like about it. This is the point of the show.
The upshot is, Michelle Monaghan's character seems really nasty in a really recognizable way, which is to say, not outsized, not bizarre or strangely imagined, but really true to life. And to me, that's the stuff that keeps me coming back to this show. I say kind of not outsized somewhat advisedly, because to me, the Ratliff parents, the parents of the wealthy family, played by Jason Isaacs and Parker Posey, they're a little big. They come in really hot for me at the start of the show, and it takes a while for their plot to get anywhere. So you're just kind of sitting with these kind of massive performances that worked less well for me. I think the fun of the show is in little shadings of social interactions and Parker Posey, especially, whom I revere in many contexts, I think came in with an intention of like, I'm going to be the Jennifer Coolidge. I'm going to be big. And it just doesn't work consistently for me, although I vibe with it more as the episodes go on.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Yeah, that it pays dividends once their situation starts to unravel and all of their shitty energy has to bounce off each other. That's sort of where it goes. But again, that takes a little while to get to that point.
Yeah, I did see a post too on Blue Sky from, I believe it was past guest Joshua Rivera, past and future guest, I should say. He,
Josh, sweating bullets.
Where he was like, I watch the show, I enjoy it, but it does seem like rich people have about five problems that they just pass around. And it that is a problem that other people have noted about this one too, where it's like, it does seem like they're sort of playing the hits, like bringing back new characters to sort of do, like you said, I'm going to be the Jennifer Coolidge. There's a bit of repetitiveness to it, which, you know, you're either here for it or you're not. I mean, as someone who watches every season of Married at First Sight, like there's only so many places these things can go. If you want to take the ride, then you take it. I also noted, this is the second time we've had you on, Dan, for a Walton Goggins show. He was in the last one we had you on for, too. Virgo, so.
I didn't even register that.
Did you get your pair of Walton Goggins goggles yet?
Yeah, well, he sent them to me in the mail as thanks for me doing relentless promo for his work. One thing, speaking of Goggins, he's the only character to me that gets at the season's stated theme, speaking of repetitiveness.
Yeah.
Mike White has done a lot of press where he's like, in this season, we're finally taking on spirituality. In the way that the show feels a little like playing the hits, the first season was about social class and the second season was about sex. And to me, this season is mainly about social class and sex. And there really is you have to really look hard to see the element of this season that's about the search for meaning. I mean, it's in the Ratliff family in the form of the daughter who's studying religion, but that's kind of not a lot to go on against the backdrop of everyone else's problems.
Yeah, it does go places with his stress management help. I mean, therapist, I guess. They call her doctor, so yeah. But, you know, he may have problems that are too big for her to handle. And we also saw her getting essentially shot at in the very first scene of the season. So she's got bigger problems, too. We've also known for a while, related to that, that the season would be set in an Asian location. There were some concerns about that, given the way the native Hawaiian characters in season one seemed like they just existed to help guests self-actualize. Does this seem like, Dan, to you, that this is feedback White has responded to productively, or would you say it's still a problem?
I think that it's evident that he has made a real effort. So points for effort, I suppose, in that the Thai characters on the show have a little more complexity to them than I maybe expected going in. They do still feel a bit like tangent to the main action of the show, and they don't feel as vibrant to me as the Italian characters on the Sicily set season. And so in that way, you could say that there's work to be done if he goes to another nation whose population is not predominantly white. But I think it's a step forward from the Hawaii season, say that much.
Yeah, I agree. I do think it's a bit of a cheat, though, that a lot of the Asian characters we do meet are staffers at the spa. Like, that's one way to get around that. It's like, I still want them to fulfill this function, so that's what they're going to do. Also, as you mentioned, the person who's most explicitly pursuing spiritualism is a white college girl from North Carolina who's in Thailand to study Buddhism. You know, like, it's not clear to me whether that's supposed to be satirical or, you know, to what degree.
I did read the profile of Mike White in a recent New Yorker. We'll link that in the show notes. And there was like a paragraph or two about the fact that he couldn't do as much with the like comedy slash tragedy of errors of sex because it's Thailand. And the first association is trafficked people. So, you know, he was like, well, then we have to set up from another angle, but then there's still sex stuff and it's still dark. So maybe this wasn't your setting then. But yeah. I mean, it, you know, it's a good profile. I don't think he's like bad at what he does. I think this is a good show that just isn't for me.
I think the one thing about The White Lotus that I always remember is that it came together in its first season as a way to have relatively inexpensive TV programming that could be shot in one location during pre-vaccine COVID. And so necessity was kind of the mother of invention, but I don't think anyone had the end game of like, this will be an anthology series where every couple years we plop down in a new location. And so I respond to this and like it, you may not. An element of the show that is just part of its DNA is it's kind of ad hoc and kind of like thrown together in a way. And so there's a sort of, the narratives are really tight, but it also fundamentally, for lack of a better word, can feel really random and respond to that. But there's a bit of a why question about this entire season that the last two episodes are just going to answer for me. It's like, we're on this journey with these people, and at the episode six mark, I'm not totally sure what is being conveyed or why we're doing it, but I like it. I'm enjoying being along for the ride, assuming he brings it in for as strong a landing as he did the first two seasons.
Yeah, I'm with you. I feel like the fact that there's transience built into it, in a sense, is like sort of part of the charm, where you're seeing people being extremely themselves, but also extremely not themselves, in a way that you are on vacation, where it's like, you know, all of your routines go out the window, although I guess some of these people still go to the gym. Couldn't be me. But yeah, I that part of it is interesting to me. Like, if you're the kind of person, which I am, when you go on vacation, you see people and you like make up stories about what their deal is. Like, it's the sort of voyeur aspect of it that makes the show charming to me. Charming's the wrong word. Interesting, compelling. Feels like we're wrapping up. Early, totally uninformed guesses. Whose corpse is it in the first scene? Dan.
Oh gosh, I hadn't even, honestly, this is crazy. I haven't even thought about it. I'm going to say the girlfriend of Walton Goggins, who is an actress from Sex Education, I think.
Chelsea. Yes. Sarah?
the Schwarzenegger.
Oh, I hope you're right, Dave.
Yeah, he's a real shit. He's pretty good at playing real shits, but he's got to really be careful. Is. He's just been playing real shits and stuff I've seen. So
great ass, though.
Woo. Oh, yeah.
I'm going to go ironic, all life is pain and suffering, and say it's the sister that's trying to get into the Buddhist monastery.
Mm, okay. I'm going to say it's the boss that made Guy Talk have to have a gun.
Oh.
We'll find out. Well, you'll find out.
It's time to go around the dial, talking about what we've been watching on TV recently, not necessarily recent TV. Tara, you're first. What do you got?
Well, it took three separate episode drops, but we're finally closing the sixth and final season of Cobra Kai.
Karate Town. Thank you.
I'll keep it short for anyone who didn't jump straight on the last five episodes because they had to watch Bridget Jones Mad About the Boy first. I also did that, but because I didn't get a screener for it. But anyway, I've definitely felt like the show's strayed from its initial goofy tone the longer it's gone on. I think I said in an earlier episode drop that I rewatched season one before season six, and it really was better. But it does recapture that magic at the end. If you can remember back to the middle episodes of this season, those ended on a kid getting killed after falling on a knife that got illegally snuck into a fight at a tournament.
Wait a sec. This guy actually fell on a knife?
Yeah.
Like that excuse?
Yep.
Okay, great.
But he really did.
Okay.
And I think it was his knife, but I don't remember. I'm not going to go back and watch it again. Obviously, given this tragedy, the tournament is suspended until the following year, but several people that we know can't wait that long. So the tournament director is convinced to put it back on, not in Barcelona. Now the finals are going to be held someplace so hilariously implausible that I was like, that's the stupid show I fell in love with. And that's the first of several incredible contrivances. So I wrote at the beginning of the season, I really barely care about the kid characters.
Guess where it is?
Sure.
Is it inside the car dealership?
No, it's just in the same place where they had the All Valley.
Oh, okay.
But it is in the Valley.
Yeah, it should have been amongst the Larusa cars.
The parked cars, yeah. I barely care about the kids. All I wanted was a happy ending for Johnny. I don't think it's much of a spoiler to say I was satisfied. There is still a theatrical Karate Kid movie coming in May that braids together the Ralph Macchio and Jackie Chan strands. I'm not sure how any of the Cobra Kai lore plays into it. And without Johnny, I'm not sure how much I will care about that either, but I will go see it. This is why I have an Alamo Pass. So fun show, really went on too long, could have been tighter, but I never really had a terrible time watching it. So farewell to Cobra Kai.
Wait, but in the Jackie Chan, it's a remake, right? Like, is he Mr. Miyagi in that?
No. Oh. And he wasn't in that movie. He's a different guy.
Oh, okay.
So in this one, he comes back with a student and he meets Ralph Macchio and they're going to, you know, whatever.
Okay. But I'm saying in the Jackie Chan Karate Kid movie, he's not supposed to be Mr. Miyagi.
He's just a different sensei.
All right. This sounds like G.I. Joe meets the Transformers or something like that. Well, it sounds absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah. And that's before I tell you, Joshua Jackson is randomly in it as well. Fantastic. I don't know.
Dr. Fuckboat, get in there.
Yes. Yeah. Fuckboat himself. Anyway.
Yeah.
Evergreen.
To close out Cobra Kai, I reviewed the last five episodes. I interviewed Jacob Bertrand as well, who plays Hawk. The links to both of those at Cracked are in the show notes. And since he's too shy and modest to mention his participation, I'm going to also plug Variety's 100 Best TV Performances of the 21st Century that Dan contributed to. We'll link that in the show notes as well. It's really hard to argue with any of these picks, I have to say. They're pretty good, but number one is like, of course. So great job.
Thank you very much. I was lucky enough to run this project, but it was something like eight colleagues of mine over months on Zoom hashing it out.
I'm sure.
And among the other X factors were we limited ourselves to one performance per show. Mm. And I think the hardest fought battle was who from Succession. Ultimately, a decision just had to be made. But I was happy with the decision you made.
I think you made the right decision there. Yeah.
Okay, thank you. I'm like having flashbacks to Zooms over months.
Reopen your trauma.
He carries the show. Anyway, yeah. No, it's good flashback. It was a lot of fun and I'm glad people are having fun with it.
Yeah.
All right, Dan, what have you been absorbing recently on television?
What I've been absorbing on television is kind of a book.
Did we know this before we got him in this week, that this guy reads books? Uh-oh.
Sorry.
That's what the trap door is for.
Activate the trap door. All right, so what have you been reading recently, Dan?
It's a book about TV.
Okay. All right. Okay, we'll allow it.
You'll allow it. Thank you. And it comes out at a very propitious time. Obviously, they did it on purpose. Days after the Saturday Night Live 50th anniversary special came the brand new biography of Lorne Michaels by Susan Morrison, who's an editor at The New Yorker. I was lucky enough to get an early copy. And I am, despite myself, interested in Saturday Night Live more academically than as a broadcast. I'm one of those people who like misses weeks. Like I'll go for a month at a time without tuning in and then catch back up. It's always just been a part of the backdrop for me, as it has been for millions of Americans. I found in Morrison's telling, Lorne to be a fairly compelling figure, even as over the years, it's just kind of like, yeah. So he's kind of a bad boss, but also everyone loves him, like many cases like that throughout history. The most interesting detail to me in this very long kind of soup to nuts take on Michaels' life is that he believed, for apparently some good reason, that he would be named editor-in-chief of The New Yorker. He kind of cultivated a friendship with the longtime editor, William Shawn, who is, among other things, Wallace Shawn's father.
Inconceivable.
When William Shawn was fired, gave him office space at Broadway Video and was just like, well, who needs to be able to edit articles? I'm just a curator. And he is just a curator, and he's a curator at SNL. And what he curated this past Sunday night was of variable quality, but it kind of speaks to the fact that it can perhaps be easy to forget that this very strange personality basically has a chokehold on the American comedy apparatus. And much like many figures in our gerontocracy, will be in his job until he's not anymore, and his replacement will be somewhat diminished. The other interesting aspect of the book is that Morrison shadows Michaels for one episode, which is a 2018 episode hosted by Jonah Hill that he kind of makes no bones about. A, it's really bad. It's not a good example of an SNL episode. B, Michaels, maybe this is just his way. We have nothing to compare it to. Seems to really disdain Hill and various other members of the cast who are going through various issues as Morrison shadows and observes. So it's a very small sample size that left me with a sense of how various personalities in the SNL orbit interact. There's an element where Lorne gets annoyed with Lindsay Shookus, who, if you are an Us Weekly reader, you will recognize that name.
Mm-hmm.
She was the talent producer who dated Ben Affleck. Anyway, worth a read. I enjoyed the time I spent with it much more than I enjoyed the SNL 50 special.
I gotta read this book. It really sounds incredible.
Lorne Michaels sounds like the thing you had to endure, therefore the next generation also must endure it in order to go through their trial by fire. It feels like it's that sort of thing that like all it takes is a couple of people to say no thank you, and then like we could break the cycle, but it's not happening. Yeah. So Saturday Night Live will endure this way until, you know, the heat death of Lorne Michaels.
Right. And that's why I gotta read this book, because, you know, when he dies, I'm definitely gonna read all of the books that are written by the people who have been waiting for that to tell the truth about him. Truly.
Seriously. All right, Dan, your book is coming out. Tell us about it, what it's about, and where people can pre-order it.
Thank you, Dave. Yes, my book is called The Talent. The elevator pitch is about five women nominated for Best Actress in award season and the rivalries and eventual friendships that are cultivated between them as they make their way to the final prize. And it is available anywhere you buy books: Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Bookshop, your local independent bookstore, your local library, on February 25th. So you can pre-order it now.
Woo! Excellent. Well, congratulations. And people, if you're listening and that interests you, absolutely check out the show notes for some sample of those links where you can pick up a copy.
Yes, I read it and it's great.
Thank you, Tara. I really appreciate that.
Sarah D. Bunting, what do you got?
Hello, I've got Yellow Jackets. So season 3 dropped its first 2 episodes the other day. I am not sure exactly which episode it was, but my esteemed wife, Tara, mentioned that she might be out after season 2 kind of spun its wheels and sniffed its own farts a lot. Certainly that was my feeling in May of, holy shit, 2023. When season 2 wrapped up, I just had felt like that entire season was stalling. The feeling that Natalie was killed off because of actor issues that were not kept sufficiently below the horizon, too many on-the-nose needle drops, the challenges of cast churn across multiple timelines. Like, I felt like the show started so strong and was so interesting and then just immediately like got out over the canyon and looked down in season 2. but I was hoping that I would feel differently come the season three premiere. Based on the first two episodes, not much has changed or improved, really. I mean, I'm gratified that we time jumped away from the wintertime indoor horror show that was increasingly starting to feel like starvation and cannibalism pornography. But then as a result, we are apparently going to spend the season with Who Burned Down the Cabin as the central mystery, which I guess is fine, except the show also seems to realize that we're much more interested in the 90s timeline, or at least find fewer of those characters less implausibly hateful. So it's rationing those scenes really strictly in the past, and it's like, just get to the earworks factory, tell us what happened, enough dicking around with this Slenderman guy in the present. Timeline, weird phone calls, Callie's emotional extortion of her parents that is giving me Paige Jennings, and that's not a compliment. And if Shauna is your central/POV character most of the time, you need to put less of a burden on the extremely talented actors playing her to paper over the inconsistent, actively off-putting behavior. I don't think it's actually impossible that a person traumatized in this particular way would be acting differently from hour to hour. Honestly, but I said this about Buffy's sixth season and more than one other project, that realistic depictions of disassociation or post-adverse event trauma are not necessarily good television. They're just realistic, not the same thing. And bless both Misty's hearts, but we fucking get it. She's a needy tryhard. I don't buy that this person would not have either evolved in one of the timelines, or just been killed and et to shut her up. But if you don't have anything else for her to do, move it forward, please. I'm not sure they're going to do that, but I'm going to give it another couple episodes to let it play out. And I feel like Melanie Lynskey knows what a good script is, so I'm just going to keep trusting her, I guess. I hope it works out. For my plug, recent reads in the true crime genre, some of which really did work out and some of which you should avoid, like the plague. You can find those at Best Evidence. That's bestevidence.fyi. And we'll have a link directly to our little tile at the site that's called Red Handed. Boo, R-E-A-D, handed. Which just talks about long reads
of books that we're
enjoying.
Boo me, boo.
I mean, it's bad. So I am going to get up and fire myself. Link in the show notes.
Let me try to save this story.
True crime.
Yeah. All right, here's what's coming up on Friday's Extra Extra Hot Grade, available to club members. We're going to be talking about Good Cop, Bad Cop. Which is the good cop? Which is the bad cop? Let us know, Reddit. It's a big mystery. No, it's not that type of show. Go to extrahotgrate.com/club for more info and to join today. You get a whole bunch of perks, including, of course, those second episodes every damn week. Every damn week we do it.
Yep.
Don't you know? And then come back here on EHG Prime next week. We're going to be talking about Suits LA. Suits. They're now in Los Angeles. What are those guys doing there? Eating lots of stuff with cilantro.
To say nothing of the sun-dried tomatoes.
Business. We welcome back Carrie. I don't know what I'm doing anymore. We welcome back Carrie Race to talk about L.A. Suits. Remember when L.A. Suits, everybody talked about Suits this, Suits that? Feels like it was like 4 years ago now. And here we are, finally. Suits L.A. Thank God. Here we go. Yeah.
Wow.
Is that a little mini stroke there?
Oh, my God.
Okay.
You want to take a clean version of that meltdown?
The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food, and before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month, so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit. Track budgets and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to get stronger just around the corner, so you can give everything you've got. Whether you want to crush a few reps before class with our expanded strength equipment or sweat it out on your way home from work. With over 2,800 locations, there's a Planet Fitness close to you, and most are open 24 hours. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends January 30th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
It is time for the Extra Hot Great Canon. Presenting this week is our guest, Dan. Dan, take it away.
Well, I'm the first to concede that And Just Like That is not without flaw. Its attempts to build out a more inclusive ensemble than the original Sex and the City crew could feel clumsy. Its grief plotline didn't always show Carrie Bradshaw, Sarah Jessica Parker, to best advantage. And the return of Aiden, John Corbett, late in season two had a certain air of randomness that characterized a lot of the show's run. But at its best, the show operates as a true sequel, checking in on beloved, to me at least, characters and tracking their incremental progress, seeing where they are now. The show's bumpy first season was spent watching Carrie move through the stages of grief after the series premiere death of her husband, Big, Chris Noff, while also welcoming new friends into her life. In this episode, said friends feel fully a part of the show's fabric at long last, while her grief manifests in interesting, moving, and, for Parker, beautifully well-performed ways. This episode, Chapter 3, is a lovely slice of life that does something very different from what Sex and the City did. That show explored social questions from every angle, where this show, at its best, takes a more minor key approach, examining how the characters deal with getting through life. Let's get through the subplots first. There is a cute but negligible Charlotte storyline about the students at her kids' school drawing up a MILF list of the, you know what it means, and her shared joy with Lisa, played by Nicole Ari Parker, at being included on it. There's not much here to go on, but Kristen Davis is given more comedy to play on this show than she ever was on Sex and the City, and it's a pleasure to see. Clip one.
The Arbor School needs to send a message that there is zero tolerance for misogyny of any kind, which is why this breach and punishment will remain on the student's record throughout the college application process.
Really, Greg? On his record?
Yes, Charlotte.
If I may, isn't that a little extreme?
Elsewhere, Miranda remains in Los Angeles, having replaced a season one substance addiction with an addiction to drama that she's convinced herself is actually a healthy release. There were strong reactions to the And Just Like That remaking of Miranda, but in my view, her storyline throughout the series is painful and real and, crucially, doesn't call too much attention to the ways in which she is screwing her life up. It just plays it out. Small moments like this one pass without explicitly demanding comment. Clip two.
Miranda?
Yeah.
It's time for you to come back to New York.
No! It's fun out here. It's like pretend life. I never wanted to end.
Miranda is hiding from a few realities, among them that her relationship with Che, Sara Ramirez, is at a dead end. Che has thrown themselves into a Tony Danza-led sitcom whose obvious badness put me in mind of The Show Within a Show from another Michael Patrick King-created comedy, The Comeback. There's genuine humor in watching this sitcom's creator bowled over by their own genius as Che and Danza act out an obviously crummy scene. Clip three.
I mean, do you remember when your cousin Lenny came out as gay? You know, that night right after putt-putt golf? I was cool with it. I mean, I was surprised. You know, for a gay kid, he could really putt-putt.
Putt-putt, Dad. Come on. You're not getting it.
When her son is in crisis during the taping, Miranda realizes all at once that hiding out from her own life might not actually be wise. Cynthia Nixon plays the moment well. But the meat of the episode is Carrie's story. Grief isn't linear, which presents a challenge for TV. How do you depict it without forcing the audience to feel mired in it? This episode's story threads that needle nicely in showing Carrie quite literally forced to relive the experience of Big's death as she narrates her audiobook. The scene of her recording is laced through with the same unshowy, delicate humor that characterizes the Miranda stuff, too. Clip four.
Chapter three. I came home from the Manhattan School of Music with Beethoven's concerto still ringing in my ears. The sound of the running shower greeted me. As I called John's name, I worried. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I just missed a word.
You okay there?
Yeah. Yeah, I guess I haven't looked at this in a while.
Soon enough, Carrie finds the attempt to read through her recollection of the worst moment of her life to be daunting. Clip 5.
It feels unprofessional.
Agreed. Why don't we just skip chapter 3 for now and
okay.
We'll come back to it another time.
Okay, yeah, we'll skip chapter 3 for now. We'll come back to it. But I hit those T's on Forgotten.
This is a really nice moment for Parker, who finds a way to characterize the laughter through tears, mordant humor feeling that's both a relief and so, so awful. I'm similarly moved when she runs into fan favorite Sex and the City character Bitsy Von Muffling, played by Julie Houston, who is undergoing her own experience of loss, and the pair have a quick chat. Clip 6.
I was suddenly right back there again. It was embarrassing. I thought I was doing so well. I got through that whole first year.
Oh, honey, the second year is worse than the first. That's the dirty little secret nobody tells you. Because time is passing and whatever's happening, you know, good, bad, weird, he's missing all of it.
There's a directness of approach to some And Just Like That moments that can feel like a lack of subtlety. But few other shows are as frank and real about how their characters are going through it. Bitsy is among the friends who get Carrie through, but it isn't easy. In order to avoid doing the recording, Carrie pretends she has COVID, for instance, a sign of the times in which this episode was released. Only gradually does Carrie feel herself come to life, as when she bonds with Sarita Chaudhary's character Seema, clip 7.
No, but they've already been so there for me. You know, I just can't put them through more of this. I mean, there's got to be like an expiration date on how much grief you can ask a friend to support.
Well, not if they're true friends. I wasn't there for the first round, but I am now. I'm all ears.
Scenes like this fulfill the potential of the cast expansion, which was too often squandered early on and finally clicked in season 2. Seema brings out new sides of Carrie, new angles, especially in the absence of Samantha, the character from the first series that she's most like. Similarly, Carrie plays something like maternal when she spends time with her younger neighbor, Lisette, played by Katarina Tannenbaum, after that neighbor's jewelry designs get burgled. Both of them have lost something, and it's through talking about it or just being together that they get through. Clip 8.
How are you?
It's gone. Everything I worked so hard to make was perfect. I have to start all over again.
I know how you feel.
In the end, Carrie triumphs, which was hardly guaranteed. This whole franchise has plenty of examples of her falling on her face. But her relying on a support system and her own resilience to be able to turn her experience into spoken word art, which she concludes while wearing the nameplate necklace that in this show's lore signifies that she's stepping into her own power, is to this viewer very moving. Clip 9.
And as I held on to John one final time, the rising water on the shower floor turned the blue of my wedding shoes black.
Okay, that's chapter 3, done.
And after pretending she had COVID briefly to escape the recording, Carrie celebrates her win by diving back into New York City, dining out with Seema and flirting with hot Australian rugby players. Oh my. Building to a genuinely funny punchline to end the episode. Clip 10.
Okay, I'm into New York again.
This party's done over here.
And just like that, I got COVID.
And just like that, I hope that you will induct this episode, Chapter 3, into the Extra Hot Great canon.
Dan, thank you so much. I'll go first because I'm the only one here who watches the show. And not only that, I'm the sicko who has watched all of And Just Like That and I'm very spotty on Sex and the City. Like, I think I'm the only person.
Wow.
Anyway.
That's wild.
I know. Wild, I really need to Unicorn. Watch Sex and the City from the beginning. I don't know why I haven't. I have to.
Do you?
It's important. I do think it's an important cultural document. That said, I know why you picked this one. You made an excellent case for it. I do think that I'll start with the Miranda plotline. I agree with you that they don't sort of stand back on that, on her character and her story, and sort of to comment on it. We just see it happen. And at this phase of her story with Che, Miranda is in LA. She's enjoying pretend life, which I thought that was really funny. I know exactly what she means about, like, you never want it to end.
I've always said that sometimes walking into LA feels like you snuck into an amusement park through a hole in the fence and nobody told you.
Yes.
It's same vibe.
Totally. Yeah.
Like, everyone, you know, they can totally have lunch any time of the day or night. Like, no one has obligations. It's crazy. Yep. But part of that is that Miranda is trying to be this person for, like, she just gave up her life to go for this show taping. And so she's still trying to be, like, the person that has no needs. And that's where the conflict comes from in this episode, where it's like, when they finally fight about her phone going off with a call from Brady in the middle of the taping, a live, like, multicam sitcom taping, like, they're both right and they're both wrong. Ultimately, the issue is, like, Che doesn't want to be in a relationship with someone who has a kid. I think that's one of many. And, like, that's understandable, but neither of them wants to admit that yet. And so I thought that plot line was well done in this episode, although shut up, Brady. And, of course, the Carrie plot line is, like, definitely a highlight of the season. It's handled really delicately, and especially watching this the same week that I watched the aforementioned Mad About the Boy, which is also about a woman of a certain age in grief over losing a husband. There are a lot of parallels between them, and I think both handled that story well. But it's definitely more central here that, you know, she's not dating in this episode. She's just trying to get through doing this memoir taping. I thought Sarah Jessica Parker did some excellent work portraying what that would be like for Carrie. And I do think it's, you know, really well written. And you're so right. Grief isn't linear. He's missing all of it, I thought was a lovely line from her friend, Muffy. Is that what? No, Fawn Muffling. See, this is why I need to watch the show. I don't know why they included the joke about, like, and one of the engineers has really bad BO. Like, it didn't go anywhere. It just seemed mean. That was a dark mark on that plot line, but I thought that was great. The problem for me with this episode is, like, it's two good plot lines and then the Charlotte one is bad. Like, I didn't think it was cute. I thought it was kind of bad. I can tell what they're trying to do with, like, oh, it's so risque and the, like, in the Sex and the City way, but it's like, don't have moms being horny for a kid. That's gross. Like, I was grossed out by that. I also thought they didn't do enough with, I know why, with having scenes where Naya and Lisa are in them together because, you know, Karen Pittman also had to shoot the morning show at the same time as this. And so she's super siloed. But the wig that they put on Nicole Ari Parker in this episode is a crime, and it was upsetting every time she was in that scene, particularly when she was in that really bad black and white jacket at the end. So I this is like two thirds of a canon worthy episode. So we'll see what everyone else thought. Sarah,
I did watch the entire show. I have revisited it occasionally. I own the movie, the first one. The second one is dead to me, but I did see it in the theater and I'm still mad. Still want my money back. But there is something about the end of the series run and then that first movie that, like, it sort of epitomizes the way that this show, like, 85% of the time is, like, corny, clueless, privileged, in love with itself, doesn't understand how repellent the characters are being. And then it'll just turn around and, like, kick you in the tits with something that is so true about loving New York or whatever city, being in your 30s, groups of female friendship, how family is found in cities among friends, all of that stuff, that this is why you would put up with shit like Miranda eating cake out of the trash, or this, like, terrible runner about, like, oh God, the BO, or a whole set up so that a character can make eyes at a sound guy is set up in a way that, like, for this exact reason, they don't have the sound guy touch you when you have a mic pack. They hand you the lavalier and they're like, thread it up your shirt. I'm not trying to get sued. So it's like, this is such a Sex in the City / And Just Like That thing that there's so much eye rolling, but then there's that moment that's like, oh, yeah, like, yes, they just, like, hit it on the screws. Is that going to be enough? Because I bailed out on this show because it just felt like everybody kind of felt obligated and wasn't feeling it. And in the absence of Samantha, like, it was just really a struggle to relate to these people and it seemed like they were sort of trying to broaden the cast and respond to concerns about the show's diversity, but in a, like, not surface way. Like, I don't know anybody's heart in that writer's room, but it just felt very, again, pleased with itself. This whole thing with Miranda's phone going off during the taping was like, oh my God, like nobody here is likable or defensible. But then you get that scene in the parking lot, which was really well done by both those actors. And then that, you know, the sort of frustration of this show is that sometimes it can't, it's like too focused on all the sort of like TM stuff that made it such a phenomenon. And it has trouble like settling into and hearing its own heart sometimes. And sometimes those proportions are livable and canonical. Like, I mean, what I always think of is that moment where Miranda leans across the table in the first part of the finale and she's like, go get our girl. And every time it's like, like, I don't know, like that's friendship. That's the heart of the show.
I just got a shiver hearing you repeat the line. So yes, that's real.
Yeah. I mean, it's so, and like, I mean, I know Noth is a disgrace and remains a disgrace, but like, I mean, like that it's hard, the show without him and without Cattrall and, you know, without a bunch of actors who are no longer with us. I don't know if the proportions are right here. I will say that I was really looking forward to this presentation because I've been very frustrated with this show, but I wanted to hear from someone who has the same like value framework for it that I do. And I think that's true. I'm just not sure, like spending all this time with the Birkin under the in the bushes and all of this stuff that I'm like, I don't know. I don't know if the proportions are there. So I am interested to hear what Dave has to say, and I'm gonna mull it over.
This is gonna change everything.
Like, yeah. Neck crack, knuckle cracks, crick crack. Here we go.
Yeah, it might. You never know. Sometimes Dave's like, you know what I liked in this? Eggplant, and you're like, well, okay, I hadn't thought of that. So Dave, bail me out.
Not happening. Yeah, I feel very under-equipped for this particular canon presentation, not having watched either show, except like maybe one or two for the canon. When there is a show that is, as Sarah was to our lead topic, you know, not for me, I kind of look for the moments that sort of transcend beyond what the show usually delivers for its fans into something a little more broader, which isn't like necessarily a trait you want in a show, but that's what I can hook into watching it sort of fresh. So it wasn't a lot for me in that regard here, except that LA line I thought was perfect, because it really does feel like when you're in LA, you're like, what the fuck is this place? Like, are days still 24 hours here? You know, like, is, you know, Fort Day? Like, what's Fort Day? Well, it's in between two other days. We got an 8-day week. Don't worry about it. It all comes out in the exchange rate when you get home. Like, is that sort of weirdness when you're there? So I thought that was good. Can't you tell your assistant or manager, whoever Carrie's person was there, just like, I don't want to do it anymore. This whole COVID thing, I was faking it. So please don't go to bat for me anymore. Like, wasn't she working for her?
Yeah, that was her agent or publisher, yeah. or editor, rather.
She doesn't seem like kind of character that would say, that wouldn't say, fuck it, I don't want to do it. I realize that it's important to the story that she get to the end of it, but yeah. I thought that particular beat was a little weird. I thought that, like, that relationship is one that she controls, and if she really would go to the lengths of faking COVID to that many people when it started to come undone, I kind of figured she would be like, guess what? You work for me and you're going to have to call them back because this is me saying I don't want to do it.
But is she the editor or her agent, Dan?
Dealing with? I thought that was her agent.
Okay.
But also, I think it's never stated, but I just took it to be that she's like contractually bound. Like that, yeah. That this is the deal that's been struck. And
oh, that makes sense.
In our world, for audiobooks, especially when it's a memoir, I think there's a really high premium placed on the author reading it for obvious reasons, but I think it may, a line might have made it stronger to explain why she couldn't back out. But I just took it to be like, her hands are tied. There was a contract.
Yeah.
Because Dan's a big wig in the publishing industry. So, you know, I don't. I think
there was a line about it that they were just like, we would almost always prefer that, especially with this subject.
Yes.
That you read it yourself.
Because there's at least a couple of instances earlier where she's like, I don't want to do it. And that woman, whatever her relationship is like, well, you kind of have to.
All right.
It's an example of Carrie's very human vanity. That she's like, I don't want to do it. Do you remember when she's like, can't we just have Juliana Margulies do it?
Right.
Yeah. Do you know her?
Yeah, right. I mean, as someone who had to like wear a bathing suit and do it in the closet in summer of 2020 for our book, I mean, I get that it's difficult material, but the whole setup sounded like a dream, that it was like, oh, someone with BO, boo-hoo. I was in a closet in a bikini. But enough about me. Really sounding like Carrie. Sorry, Tara.
Why was it in a bikini?
Because it was hot.
You were on vacation?
Sarah's just weird, Dan.
Oh, I see.
Oh. She's just weirdo.
Yeah. No, we had to record it ourselves because you couldn't. I mean, it was pre-vaccine COVID. So
yeah.
Soundproofing was in the closet and it was hot as hell.
Yeah, I might never write the word ungovernable again for how many times I had to retake that one line in the book.
All right. Anyways, back to the canon.
Yes, this isn't about me, I guess.
I guess the other thing about Sex and the City I know is that you have to tell which kind of person you are, and I'm a lost purse. That's my only other thing I really have to add. All right, let's put this to the official vote. Tara Ariano, what say you?
Well, first of all, I'm an engineer with BO, I think, probably.
Yeah, that's true.
I'm going to vote yes. I think on balance, it's definitely the best episode of this show. I talked myself into liking the parts I liked more than I disliked the parts I didn't. So I will vote yay.
Sarah D. Bunning.
Yeah, I can't quite get there. I think this is the best episode that I've seen, but I think that still doesn't quite mean that it's great. The presentation was great. Mm-hmm. However, I must vote no.
Oh, boy. Well, I'm sorry, Dan, it came up to me to break this tie because I am not the champion of this show. So I'm going to unfortunately say no, which means... And just like that, Season 2, Episode 3, Chapter 3, you're hereby not inducted into the extra Hot Great Canon.
Americans love a winner.
Yup.
And will not tolerate a loser.
Nope.
All right, it's time to discover the winner and loser of the week. Sarah has this week's winner.
I certainly do. It's Jamaica Bay, New York, aka Queens. That is where True Detective will be set for its fifth season. Apparently, we can expect that in 2027. I look forward to welcoming it if we all live that long. Woo!
Yay!
But sounds fun.
And loser of the week, Tara.
Well, speaking of Long Island, it's Ray Romano, who we find out this week missed out on a job writing monologues on Late Night with Conan O'Brien, but don't feel too bad for him or about the fact that he was hired to be in the news radio pilot and got fired before they shot it, because all of this happened right before Everybody Loves Raymond, so he's fine. He worked it out.
Got a little bonus here in Winner and Loser.
What?
Is this worse than jazz?
Is Netflix's six-hour support for Apple TV's watch list worse than jazz? Last week, Netflix, longtime holdout to make their shit work with Apple TV's what you're watching and be able to track your shows and all that, suddenly started working for some people. And then everybody's like, yay, Netflix, you're finally coming to the party. And the Netflix is like, 6 hours later, nah, that was just a bug.
No!
So, are you just learning about this now, Tara?
Yes.
So, is having a little bit of Netflix hope worse than jazz,
yes,
Tara?
Yes. Yes, it's worse.
Because you're listening to the notes Netflix isn't playing.
Yeah. There are whole seasons of Love is Blind that I just never watched because they were not in my little, you know, dashboard on the home screen.
Yeah.
Stupid Netflix.
I'm sorry. Well, that's the way it goes. Speaking about that's the way it goes, you know what time it is?
Game time.
It is game time. It is game time. In fact, it is the sixth of the season. The scores are Tara on the board with 1, Sarah with 2, Value Guess also with 2. Today, we're playing a sequel to a game from another Dan Rogge, brought to us many, many years ago, like over 10 years ago, I am sure. Back in the day, back in those sweet, sweet days, you could count on online translation sites to give you terrible results every single time you used them. Unfortunately, these days, you really have to work at making a quality shit translation. But I put in the work and today present you with Lost in Translation 2025. In this game, I have put TV quotes, catchphrases, and taglines into massive Google translation chains. So we started English, we go through a bunch of languages, and we spit out English at the end of that chain. You will get up to 4 clues to guess the quote, catchphrase, or tagline. First, you'll get the line put through a chain of 20 language-to-language translations before getting it back in English. Then, if you don't get it, a chain of 15, then a chain of 10. If you still don't have the answer, I will give you the name of the show the line is from, after which it is worth 1 point. So 4 points at the top, 1 point at the end of your clues. You get to guess at every single part, Sarah D. Bunting.
Woo!
All right. We're not going to do steal meals today because of the nature of the game. So we're just going to throw it to Picky to see who is going first.
We will start with valued guest.
All right. So Dan's in the hot seat. And then we're going to go to Sarah, then Tara. We have 21 questions. We're going to do one gross earth equalizer challenge zone somewhere near the middle. Are we ready to play Lost in Translation 2025?
Yes.
Yeah.
All right. So for your first question each, I've given you a line from a show I know that you enjoy and watch a lot. So it's going to be up in your fave list, okay?
Great.
So you have that. After that, all bets are off.
Okay.
So, Dan, here is your long chain translation of a line from a show, a catchphrase from a show, the tagline from the show. One of those. Agreed up hands. Agreed up hands. Name. So what line do you think that is? You can talk out your answer. Nobody can steal your answer if you want to figure out what that might be from. But here again is the line translated 20 times. Agreed up hands. Agreed up hands. Name. What's that actual line?
It sounds like agreed might be a version of yes, but I'm just not quite there. Next, please.
All right, here is your medium chain. It's not worth it. It's not worth it. I will go away.
The first one was it ended with name, and now it ends with I will go away. Got to do one more. I'm sorry.
All right, here is your shortest translation. Stupid hand. Stupid hand. Trauma.
What? These change so much. This is completely mind-boggling.
I will say
trauma.
As you play this game, you will appreciate sometimes you get a really good translation on the longer chain and then the short chain screws you because part of the mix is it randomizing the languages every time.
Okay, I was wondering if it was always being Norwegian to Thai or something.
It's totally random. Yeah. All right. So once again, you got agreed up hands, name. Then it's not worth it. It's not worth it. I will go away. Stupid hand, trauma. And you got the show as a clue coming at you next.
Let's do the show name.
All right. So you've heard all the translations. The show is 6 feet under. A famous line, catchphrase, something from 6 feet under. Stupid hand, trauma.
You know what it is? I don't know if this...
If you get it in the ballpark, I'll give you the points.
Is it numb arm, narm?
It is! Numb arm, narm is the translation
narm.
There.
Oh my God.
All right. Sarah, you got the biggest line here, and I like your chances of getting it off the bat. So here is your long translation chain. Criminals! People come from two kinds. Police officers that appear really, and regional lawyer. These are your notes. You can just give me the gist of the line. You don't have to give me the verbatim.
Oh, she knows it off
Okay,
by
let's
heart.
See if she can get it verbatim. Here we go.
Two separate but equally important groups. The police who investigate crime and the district attorneys who prosecute the offenders. These are their stories.
Yes, very good. That is worth 4 points. 4 point grab. Tara.
Yes.
Men regular double pie. That is your long chain translation. Men regular double pie.
Next.
The kangaroo eats the pizza.
Next.
Short chain, unique man to pizza. So you have men regular double pie.
Yeah.
The kangaroo eats the pizza.
Okay, I got it.
Unique man to pizza.
The Joey special, two pizzas.
A Joey special is two pizzas, is correct, from Friends. All right. That was the easy question for y'all.
Great.
These are all really well-known things, so you don't have to like dig too deep. These are all-timer lines or catchphrases or taglines.
Okay.
Back to Dan. Looking with soul won't kill you. Looking with soul won't kill you.
Next, please.
Seeing and all warmth, but you don't include.
Looking with soul, seeing and all warmth. So it's something visual that has a nice component, but I need one more.
Okay. Short chain. With my eyes, my heart has been completely discounted. With my eyes, my heart has been completely discounted.
I want to say, but this isn't really an iconic quote and I can't call the phrasing to mind, that it's not this. The only thing I can think of is that thing in The Simpsons where they videotape Ralph Wiggum and they say this, you can see the moment his heart explodes, but I don't think it's that.
Yeah. It's not, but I love that guess. I love guesses.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay, the show we're talking about is Friday Night Lights.
Oh, full eyes, clear hearts can't lose.
Yeah, that's good enough. All right.
But wait, clear eyes, full heart. Run
for
that
one
back.
One point. Yeah. Yeah, you can see the moment his eyes get clear. Yeah. Sarah.
Yeah.
Current stability, foolishness for stupidity. Your long chain once again. Current stability, foolishness for stupidity.
Next.
Now relaxed, then crazy. Mm-hmm. Oh, everybody else is nodding. Everybody else seems to know it, Sarah. What's wrong with you?
I don't know. Let's find out with the short chain.
The tranquility now, the madness later. So once again, you've got current stability, foolishness for stupidity. Now relaxed, then crazy. The tranquility now, the madness later. And you have the show coming up as your next hint. Who broke Sarah already? Two questions in. She's broken.
Yeah, I'm broken. It's a different stroke. So could I have the show, please?
The show is Seinfeld. I mean, but honestly, what's the deal with it? The tranquility now, the madness later.
My mind is emptied of phrases and is just filled with a pirate shirt. It's not helpful.
Like morale, the beatings will continue until morale improves? That kind of pirate shirt?
Yeah, that no soup for you? I don't know the answer to this.
Let her know.
Serenity now, insanity later.
That's right.
Yes. I don't remember that quote at all. Wow. Okay, all right. Thank you.
Tara.
Yeah.
Your extension is very limited. Good day.
Next.
You're the worst. Wild.
Next.
Be out. Relax next time.
Next.
The show is The Weakest Link.
Oh, you are the weakest link. Goodbye.
You are the weakest link. Goodbye. Oh, you're the worst, God. Wild. All right, back to Dan. I like this one a lot. I look forward to thinking with the ears. I look forward to thinking with the ears.
Is it when on Frasier when he said, I'm listening?
You, sir, just got yourself 4 points.
Whoa, that was a total
also,
guess.
Your next ones were inquire, exclamation point. And I can hear it.
Mm-hmm.
Excellent. Okay. 4 points. Nice grab.
Good job. Thank
you. All right, this is another good one.
Oh, no.
Sarah, crack, zoo, lightning.
Crack, zoo,
lightning.
Lightning. Lightning. Okay, next, please.
Bank, call, new nest.
Bank call new nest.
Yeah.
Showcase showdown.
Your short translation chain. Bang. Improvement. Direct months.
Direct months?
Yeah, like 12 in a year.
Okay, got it. I need the show.
Okay.
I just, before I give you the show, I want to say I'm trying to split the difference between reading it exactly like they do on the show and not doing that. So the show is The Honeymooners.
Oh, bam, to the moon, Alice.
Yeah, that was good. Bang, zoom, straight to the moon is what we're exactly looking for. But that is good enough for 1 point. Crack, zoom, lightning. You can kind of see it. I don't understand the translation efforts there, but that's not mine to know. Tara.
Yep.
I need metal, but I need a lot.
Next.
Explore my light with metal equipment.
Next.
Bite of lower metal.
Next.
The show is Futurama. Once again, I need metal, but I need a lot. Explore my light with metal equipment. Bite of lower metal. Futurama.
Bite my shiny metal ass.
Bite my shiny metal ass. Good for 1 point. Back to Dan. Everybody's got one more before we take a score break. All right. Once in a while, the translation, I'm going to say like hallucinates.
Oh, no.
And this is definitely one of them, and I enjoy it. It's Jar Vic. Watch, 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 watch. Wanch, splat.
Wanch.
Wow.
If you get this, we're giving you 200 points, just so you know, off this. All right, so once again, it's Jar, Vic, watch, 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 wanch, splat. Please put out a guess.
Yeah, does that translate to and just like that?
Okay. All right, your medium chain, debt, wait, day.
Debt, like credit card debt, like D-E-B-T? Debt,
wait, as in a period of time, day, as in a solar cycle.
I don't got it.
Guess next. I want to know what you're thinking. Guess it.
Wait, the middle word is wait, like to wait for a train or wait?
Yeah. Like, wait, don't tell me.
Yeah. W-A-I-T. Okay.
Debt, wait, train. Debt, wait, day, I should say. Yeah, I don't. It's like, wait, is it, this is, just because it has
guess
the word
it.
Wait in it.
Guess it. Guess
do,
it.
Do you know, like, on How I Met Your Mother, when Neil Patrick Harris says, legend, wait for it, dairy? Is it that?
It is that. It Amazing. Is 3 point really? Answer. Your next clue
oh my
was
gosh.
Stories delayed, but there will contain milk products.
I can't sure. believe that. Wow.
3 points. That's why you guess. You almost didn't guess. I almost didn't guess. All right. Good job.
Thank you.
Sarah.
Yeah.
Don't hurt me. I don't like you. Don't hurt me. I don't like you. That is a catchphrase or whatever translated 20 times.
We were on a break.
Medium chain. Don't get angry with me. You don't love me.
The fuck did I do?
Don't be angry with me when I'm angry.
Will you accept this, Rose? I need the show.
Your show, a lot like The Bachelor, is The Incredible Hulk. Don't hurt me, I don't like you. Don't get angry with me, you don't love me. Don't be angry
don't
with
know.
Me
I
when
don't
I'm
remember
angry.
His phrase. You won't like me when I'm angry? Is that the phrase?
Yeah. Don't make me angry, you won't like me when I'm angry. Good for a point. All right, Tara, this will take us into our score break.
Okay.
It's a full story that will feel your results.
Next.
I was very happy because we were at the end.
Next.
I like it when you have a success project.
I like it too. Next.
I think Sarah figured it out. The show is The A-Team.
Oh, I love it when a plan comes together.
I love it when a plan comes together is good for 1 point. And we are at our score break. I need them scores.
Okay, Sarah, please fact check me. Dan has 9, Sarah has 6, I have 5.
Yep.
Very good.
Sarah, do you concur? I'm doing my doctor from Catch Me If You Can.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so that means that, Tara, you're in the Gross Worth Equalizer Challenge Zone.
Okay. Come on. Thank you.
All right, so give me a number between 1 and 7, please.
6.
You get the 80s Trivial Pursuit box.
Okay.
3 Ooh. Or 6 points, depending on how well you do. You get half the questions, you get 3. You sweep the set, you get 6.
Okay.
TV questions from that set.
What sitcom went through housekeepers Garrett, Adelaide, and Pearl until Mr. Drummond found a Mrs.?
Different Strokes.
Different Strokes. Correct for one.
And a Sarah point.
What Ted Knight sitcom was based on the British TV hit Keep It in the Family?
Too Close for Comfort.
That is good for two. What actress who played Flo in the movie Alice Doesn't Live Here Anymore appeared as Flo's replacement Belle on the TV series Alice?
Diane Ladd.
That is good. You now have 3 points, three more questions, and we'll double it to six. Which ABC stunt show featured John Davidson's warning, "Do not try this yourself"? I don't know if I would classify that as a stunt show, okay, but that's the question you've been given.
That's Incredible.
That's Incredible is correct. What drama bumped off its popular Gary Shepard character in a tragic bicycling accident?
30-something.
All right, this is it for 6 points. It's going to be quite the grab. Who parlayed tiny parts in his older sister's films The Karate Kid and Cocktail into a juicy role on Melrose Place?
Mr. Andrew Hsu.
You are correct.
Andrew
straight
Hsu.
From the mouth of one of the co-hosts of Again With This. Melrose Place, Dawson's Creek, Beverly Hills 90210. That was a sweep. So you got 6 points. So let's update scores.
And my first Sarah point ever, according
to my
records.
Congratulations. I wonder what you can cast Sarah points in for.
Thanks.
I don't Sarah, know.
Sarah has 6. Dan has 9. I have 11.
All right. Still, everybody's got 3 questions left, so you can add 12 to your score if you do really good. So let's see how it goes. We're back to Dan. This is my favorite translation of the game. I was laughing so hard because I was imagining making merchandise with it. And then after that, I thought, oh, that's too much work for 2 people that would buy it. But I just want to let you know that I thought about it. Here we go, Dan.
Can confirm he was laughing on the couch when he thought it was thought it was Sunday.
I'm thinking about
it
now.
Was Saturday.
I know exactly what the shirt looks like and everything. But all right, here we go. Dan, your long translation is, you did so well. You did so well.
You did so well.
So well. Again, if you get it off this, 200 points. We end the episode right here. I don't even bother editing it. I'm just going to telephone it to everybody who wants it.
I'm like, there are so many possible things that I'm like drawing a blank. It's like the paradox of choice. Like one character saying to another something positive and affirming. Dynamite.
Love it.
Excellent guess.
Good guess.
Thank you.
Your medium chain, go the distance with excellence.
Let's hear the next one, please.
You lived in your life for the rest of your life. So all your translations are, you did so well. You did so well. Go the distance with excellence. You lived in your life for the rest of your life.
In my mind, this wants to be like a reality show send-off, but
that was my first thought with you did so well, mm-hmm. too.
No, your judge, though.
So I just felt, my guess will be The Tribe Has Spoken.
That's what I thought, too!
Okay.
Oh, that's right. Good.
You did so well. Go the distance with excellence. You lived in your life for the rest of your life. The show is Star Trek.
Oh.
Oh, live long and prosper.
You did so well.
You did so well. It doesn't really sound like Spock to me. Really
okay, good. So the shirt's a line drawing of Spock from the animated series.
Yeah.
And it's like one of those where he's like got his hand over his mouth like the Kirk one. It's like there's a whole bunch like that. And it's like, you did so well.
No, make that shirt. That's great.
Oh, you kidding?
You
for the 3 people that would buy it and have Paramount goons knocking on our door in 2 minutes, no thank you. But, you know,
just
if you want to make
your
own.
His ears normal, then they can't get you.
That's right.
Change his ears and his hair. It could be anybody.
Mm-hmm. All right. Sarah D. Bunting.
Yeah.
If you are not expensive to your children, imitate. If you are not expensive to your children, imitate.
Survey says.
If you are not for the child you love, I will go out. If you are not for the child you loved, I will go out.
Next.
If you are not mixing your children, I will succeed.
If you are not mixing your children, I don't know. Show, please.
The show is Scooby-Doo, Where Are You? Once again, you've got, if you are not expensive to your children, imitate. If you are not for the child you loved, okay. I will go out. And If you are not mixing your children, I will succeed.
Okay, I would have gotten away with it if it weren't for those meddling kids.
You are correct. That is good for a point. Tara.
Yeah.
Rejoice. Apparently, you are false.
Next.
Camera, camera on the camera.
Next.
Grinning with honesty to the camera.
Make love to the camera?
The show is Candid Camera.
You're on Candid Camera.
Little, one more. You're missing one word. We're going to give it to you, but think about it. Grinning with honesty to the camera.
Surprise?
All right, fine.
Okay.
Smile. You're on Candid Camera. Are you ready, Dan?
Yes.
What is the fact? What is the fact? F-A-C-T.
Oh, I think I just got it.
I feel like there's not like a catchphrase like this on Jeopardy. The truth is out there.
The truth is out there for points.
Whoa. Right,
here's the other ones.
Oh my God.
These are all good.
It's a horse race, folks.
Verified data arrives quickly. Okay. Abroad is true. The X-Files. Nicely done. That's your second 4-point get of the game.
Amazing.
Thank you. Abroad, like in another country?
Yeah.
Or
travel abroad.
Like, yeah. I thought like okay, abroad. Okay, yeah.
Yeah. Abroad, hey.
Not hey, like a day.
Oh. He's got curves that won't quit.
I'm truthing here.
This is question 17.
It's pretty
good. No, this is pretty good.
It is for Sarah. Get the average fall. Get the average fall. Fall.
Get the average fall. Next.
Exceptional success. Pain due to the case. Exceptional success. Pain due to the case.
Just one more thing.
I tried to put that in the game, but the translations just were like, just one more thing.
Mm-hmm. And one more item.
Your short translation. Successful victory, surviving sadness. So all three are get the average fall, exceptional success, pain due to the case, and successful victory, surviving sadness.
I need the show. Sorry.
The show is The Wide World of Sports.
Oh, the thrill of victory, the agony of defeat.
You are correct for 1 point. Tara.
Yep.
Give it 5 minutes.
Next.
This letter is independently busy. You mean in 5 seconds.
This message will self-destruct in 5 seconds.
This tape will self-destruct in 5 seconds. Yes. Your last translation was, the party was deleted 5 seconds ago.
If I had a nickel.
Mission impossible there. All right. Everybody's last question coming at you. This is, in fact, question 19. It is Dan's last. Your first translation, put through the system 20 times. Sexual tube name. Sexual tube name.
I don't like that at all.
Sexual tube name.
Tube.
Yeah. T-U-B-E.
I don't know. Is he sponge worthy from Seinfeld?
Oh, good guess.
Ooh, yeah.
I will say no show appears twice, though.
Yeah. I just wanted to say something.
Your medium translation is name of the sexual relationship.
Sexual tube name of, so things that have come up twice are sex and names or calling something.
Yeah,
I don't have it. Next.
Short translation, content for sex line. So, sexual tube name of the sexual relationship, content for sex line.
Something tells me you're going to tell me the name of the show and I'm just going to like slap my forehead, but that's just going to be what it has to be. So can I have the name of the show, please?
All right, let's see. Let's see if his head gets slapped. Your show is Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
My head is not being slapped because I'm still drawing a blank. And I've watched Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Sexual tube name of the sexual relationship, content for sex line.
The only line I possibly even remember from that show
Hit us.
Is when Holt says hot damn, but I don't think that's
it. Is it hot damn? It is not hot damn. Tara, do you know?
Name of your sex tape.
The title of your sex tape.
Oh, title of your sex tape. Mm-hmm.
I guess I didn't say that episode. Yeah.
It's a long, it's a running joke. Yeah.
Oh, I'm being doxxed. I didn't watch it closely. I'm sorry.
You called it Brooklyn 8-8 earlier. What the hell? All right. Sarah.
Yeah.
I'm not saying I am very different. I'm not saying I am very different.
Next.
I am not a year. I'm lonely.
I am not a year. I'm lonely. Is this we were on a break?
Short translation. I am not counting. I am free. Once again, Sarah, know your judge.
I am not counting. I am free.
Does Sarah have a chance here? Is she in the mix?
Well, we watched the show I don't. For the okay. canon. Oh, you need
I
to
am
win.
Not counting.
Sorry.
I am free.
Picture it, Sicily, 1904.
The show is The Prisoner. I am not saying I am very different. I am not a year. I'm lonely. I am not counting. I am free.
I don't know. I don't know what the big line is for The Prisoner. We're sorry.
All right. I am not a number. I am a free. I don't know why I got Kennedy. I'm not a number. I am a free man.
In my pants.
Ponce's pants. All right, no points there. Tara, last question of regulation. Okay. I want to swear.
Next.
I want to buy a voice file.
I want to buy a vowel.
I want to buy a vowel is correct for 3 points. I want to buy a blood character was your last translation. Wheel of Fortune, I would like to buy a vowel. That ends regulation. Let's hear the scores.
Okay, Sarah finished with, I wrote down 9. I'm looking at 8 hash marks. Sarah has
There's
8. Dan has 14. I have 18.
Oh, all right. So the equalizer zone was your friend. I've got 2 bonus ones here. We'll play them.
Okay.
First person to give me a correct answer wins a future steel meal for use. Here we go. Once again, you're giving me the line. Hello, neighbors.
Howdy ho, neighborino.
Any other guesses here? Hello, neighbors.
Is it, what's the show where someone says, hey, you guys? I don't think it's that.
Electric Company.
Okay.
It's not that. I'm here inside your doors. Hello, neighbors. And I'm here inside your doors.
It's me, Stan.
Hi, honey, I'm home.
Any guesses, Dan?
It's me inside your doors. Got nothing.
Last translation is, I knocked at the door.
I am the one who knocks.
I am the one who knocks. Breaking
nice.
Bad. Yes,
nice.
I stand. All right, that's a future seal meal for the value guest. I have one more. Here we go. Lucky and open. Lucky and open. All right, second one. Congratulations. Do not mistake.
Good luck and don't fuck it up.
Good luck and don't fuck it up from RuPaul's Drag Race in honor of Dan Rogge, our original Lost in Translation creator. Nicely done. So that is a value guest extra steel meal. Mm-hmm. But today was won by Tara Ariano.
Tara.
And that is it for this episode of Extra Hot Great. We recentered ourselves for the 3rd season of The White Lotus before going around the dial with stops at Karate Town, The Laurent Book, and Yellow Jackets. And just like that, Dan unfortunately didn't get his Chapter 3 pitch into the canon. We crowned winners and losers of the week, and Tara was the winner of this week's Game Time. Next up is Good Cop / Bad Cop on Friday's Extra, Extra Hot Crate. Remember...
We're listening.
I am David T. Cole, and on behalf of Tara.
Who wrote this thing anyway?
Sarah.
Oh, God, the B.O.
And Dan.
We did so well.
Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time right here on Extra Acre.
Can we not say goodbye on a yucky note like this?
Please stop talking.